Good morning. My name is Jim Gerling. I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Jim.
By God's grace, good sponsorship, the actions of Alcoholics Anonymous, I've been sober since September 1st of 1998. There's one cup of coffee down. This talk's going to go quickly. I saw it coming, and I was sitting there watching, and I saw it kind of start tipping, and I was powerless to do anything about it. I can assure you, the only reason my life is any good at all is because you people are in it, and you let me be a part of your life. I'd like to thank the committee for asking me to participate today. I can assure you that I've heard most of the speakers who are here with us this weekend. I've heard most of them speak, and you are in for a real treat. The message that these people carry really contains depth and weight. Morning. I used to drink. Alcoholics Anonymous does for me in the long term what alcohol used to do in the short term. Here today I've learned that I can be okay and be sober and sometimes feel like I'm really in the right place at the right time and I don't have to take a drink to do it. And I never had that before. The only time I had that before was when I drank alcohol. And I didn't even know it, you know, until I drank alcohol. You may have heard described from in Alcoholics Anonymous. I've heard it come, you know, many different ways. I am a person who just never really felt like they were in the right place at the right time. There was always happening somewhere else, with someone else, doing something else that was going to somehow fix, in a vague way, what I vaguely knew what was wrong with me. There was something wrong, and I really couldn't quite figure it out. I didn't know if it was the world, and I didn't know if it was me. And so my life was really just sort of a quest from an early age to try and to fix what Jim's mom so aptly talks about, those missing pieces that I seem to have as I went through my life. I tried a lot of different things before I found alcohol. I always sort of related to the Parton Bill story, you know, where he talks about the warnings and the prejudices of his people concerning drink, because my mom did this a lot. Jim, you shouldn't drink. And I never intended to, you know. When she described those people in my family who couldn't hold their liquor, I thought those poor people are dropping their drinks everywhere. I didn't know what that meant at all. At any rate, one time in an attempt to fit in, you know, I joined a gang, and I really just longed to be a part of. I want to tell you, though, if you want to strike terror into the hearts of those on the playground, don't join a gang called the Sunshine Boys. It wasn't what I expected, and of course I was disappointed, and I had to quit. And I think long about, to give you an example of how much I think about myself, I'm always thinking about me or what you think of me, and I didn't really realize that until I got to Alcoholics Anonymous. I wouldn't have really been able to tell you. I still don't understand the depth of my selfishness. I'm maybe just beginning to understand that now. I'm just so self-absorbed all the time. And I'm in school, and I feel inadequate, and I feel, you know, just kind of a little anxious, and I've got a best friend, but, you know, I'm sure he's got another best friend somewhere else. And if you really knew me, you know, but yet I'm struggling to fit in. And I was in choir when I was in junior high, and the choir teacher was going over some stuff, and he hit a note on the piano. He said, Jim, can you sing that note? And I sang that note. And he said, you've got a pretty good ear. And that's all I needed to hear. I got some recognition. I got some approval. And I sang in everything I could be in, you know, from that time on. And I really tried hard. And I got into my senior year, and I went to the contest or whatever, and I got the honors concert solo, you know. And, like, this was the big deal right then, you know. And I got out there, and I sang my song, and everybody applauded, and I walked away just feeling empty, you know, because I always look for something outside of me to make me whole, you know. And long about that time, same time in high, or I guess a few years earlier in high school, some guy came up to me. I was in a new town, you know, just really uncomfortable and feeling out of place, and he came up to me and said, hey, you want to split a six-pack? And I'm like, you bet, you know. Right away, there's no mental hesitation, you know. I don't have I don't have the defense it takes to stay away from that first drink, and I don't even have the hesitation. I'm like, you bet. You know, I seek approval. I didn't really like the guy, you know. And he said, okay, give me $3 and we'll go get a six pack. We'll split it. And a couple years ago in AA, I realized that was like 1982. You know, I gave this guy $3 for a six pack. I got ripped off, you know. I bought that guy half of a six pack, but yeah, it was worth it. You know, by the time I got those three beers down me, my whole perception on life changed. Everything just sort of, all that anxiety and fear and guilt and frustration, sometimes there was a reason for it, sometimes there wasn't. I just had these nameless feelings bouncing around inside me. All that stuff just went, and it didn't matter. None of that stuff mattered. And I thought, why the hell would my mom ever tell me not to do this? You know, because it worked, and it worked well. And I love the effect that's produced by alcohol. I get that sense of ease and comfort that comes at once by taking a few drinks. And I don't even have to take them. You know, all I have to do is think about taking them, and my whole attitude can change, you know. And I seem to, certainly I wasn't aware of it then, but I would just walk around in these periods of sobriety and get more and more uptight and more anxious and more, you know, just, and until I could again have that, you know, and I couldn't stay away from it. And I got in a little trouble right away. I went to alcohol treatment. My parents sent me to treatment when I was 16 years old. So, and after that, I got out and I did the steps in treatment, and the counselor said, "You're never gonna make it." And I was, you know, gave me a little finger, and I went out and I went to my meeting a week in the little town where I lived, and I listened. It seems to me, now that, keep in mind, I have a perception problem, but it seems to me that they just talked about not drinking, you know. And it wasn't very long before those feelings just started to come back. And I remember really being anxious and unsettled one night, and I was laying in my bed, and I'm thinking, it's not the booze I miss. You know, these people in AA, they're talking about not drinking, and they go to their meetings, but it's the feeling that it gave me. I live for that. I love that. And I'd never heard it mentioned in a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. Of course, I'm not a very good listener either, so... not to say that message wasn't there, but I wasn't ready to hear it. And I, you know, in AA, I'm beginning to learn a lot of things. I'm beginning to learn about this disease that I suffer from, alcoholism, which is apparently twofold, obsession and allergy, okay? And so I get to college, and I'm talking to this guy and walking around just, you know, sober and uptight, and I feel out of place, just like I always feel. And we were hanging out one night, and he says, "Jim, you ever shotgunned a beer?" By God, no. What's that? What is this? How do you shotgun a beer? So he went through the whole process, you know, showed me how to do it. And I'm like, by God, I have never shotgunned a beer. So this time it'll probably be all right. Never mind the time I was sober. Never mind the trouble I got in. And I tell you, I did not get it for years. I drank long past the point where anything important in my life was gone. Anybody important in my life was telling me, "Jim, look, we love you, but you're dying. You're killing yourself." I got those frothy emotional appeals from my family, and I couldn't get past it. So I have this this thing, this obsession in my head that causes me to think, it'll be okay. It's going to be okay this time. You know why? Because I'm not going to drink that stuff. I'm not going to drink it with those people, you know. And I don't know how blue I can get up here, but when I came to... with no clothes on, in the back of a hatchback in Main Avenue on Fargo, you know, Sunday morning. Is there a worse time than Sunday morning? The sun's shining, you know, right through that hatch like big God's flashlight, just, you know. And I remember scraping my clothes together and climbing out of the car and starting the long walk. I'm all the way across town back home thinking, I will never drink slow gin with somebody who I met at a bus stop again, ever. You know, because look what happened. These people are driving by on Sunday morning on the way to church, you know. In my mind, you know, that hatchback was parked on an incline. I don't know that it was, but I'm sure. Surprised the cops weren't called again. So what is it in my mind that causes me to throw all that stuff out the window and worse? You know, when I woke up... glued to the carpet in what I'm pretty sure I don't have a real exciting drinking story, but because I passed out a lot and I peed everywhere, and you know, that sums it up. So when I came to after this party, peeling my face off the carpet and what I hope was my own urine. I hope it wasn't somebody else's. You know. And I remember vaguely the night before going around the party, and the guy who had stabbed me 2 weeks earlier was introducing himself as a stabbing suspect, and I was introducing myself as a stabbing victim. And when those kind of things happen in my life, and then I sober up and I realize I have nowhere else to turn, that's where I end up again. You know, I have no place else to go. The wheels were gone long before I was ready to sober up, and so. You don't get asked back to many parties when stuff like that happens, mind you. I got to wear a patch for a long time. We were at a party in Washington. I suppose I should jump back here. I jump around a lot, right, Jeff? I was at a party in Washington one night, in Washington State. I got to tell you, I make bad decisions, drunk or sober, okay? So how did this start? I woke up one morning in college, and I thought, this place is killing me. Not to mention the fact that I hadn't gone to class for 2 weeks and I was partying all night and drinking, you know, sleeping all day. But I just woke up this morning and I thought, this place is killing me. I got to get out of here. So I instantly made the decision that I was going to hitchhike across the country. I end up out west somewhere in Washington State in this little fishing town and hanging out with my new buddies, who one of whom was just released from McNeil Island Penitentiary for armed robbery. I want you to know, though, I'm the lower companion here, okay? So... getting a little argument at a party one night, and I get stabbed in the eye. And 2 weeks later, you know, when they're picking me up from the hospital, same people, and we're heading to the bar, you know, all that stuff is, how does that stuff leave my mind? Other than to say, I am absolutely powerless over alcohol. I used to think that powerlessness was the fact that I would go out and I drink and I do stupid stuff like that. But I can't stay away from it in the first place, period. Given the chance, I will always take that first drink, and that's what it comes down to. I have no ability to control whether I'm going to take that drink or not. And the other part of alcoholism is the allergy, as I understand. And the allergy is that abnormal reaction that I seem to have when I get a few drinks in me, and I don't want to stop. And it's not, you know, hey, I'm going to pull out the brown paper bag and sit down on the curb and drink. It's, you know, I tell myself, well, I'm not going to drink, or when I go to the bar, I'm going to have six, and I bought the sixth one because I drank them in like a half hour. It's happy hour, man. And I'm thinking, is this six or seven? Ah, screw it, you know, and I'm off, you know. And I always overshoot the mark, and I, you know, come to the next day somewhere, God knows how, and I'm trying to figure out what happened, and that just, you know, it kind of propels me to the next drink. So if I could just stay away from it, probably be okay, or if I could just control it. I had some experiments there. I remember standing at the bar one night, and I was able to, a few times maybe, muster the ability to just have a beer or something, you know, and I was miserable. I was pissed. I was just pissed the whole time, and so I couldn't control and enjoy my drinking, and that's what constantly goes through my mind. So I start to drink, and I have this reaction, and I want more, I don't know. Maybe they say maybe 10% of the population has that reaction to alcohol. I don't know. But when I heard allergy, I always thought, like, you know, sneezes and, you know, the different kind of allergies you have. My grandma has an allergy to bee stings, for example. And she doesn't do anything to put herself in a place where she can be around bees. You know, it's always rolling up the windows, and she carries a little shot with her in case she does happen to get stung. She can take care of that allergic reaction. And her mind, you know what I mean, my grandma, God bless her, 93 I think she is now, but she's never called me once and said, Jim, you know, I think it was just those plain old honeybees that did it me in last time. I'm probably going to go hang around these bumblebees and I'll probably be okay, you know. But with my mind, you know, that's, I have that allergic reaction in a mind that you know, and it kills me. It literally kills me. And so I went in and out of Alcoholics Anonymous a lot since I was 16. So if you're new or retread like me, or if you're maybe you're in AA for a while and you just, you know, you're on the verge of leaving. There goes one now. come back. Damn. Listen. Welcome to Alcoholics Anonymous, and I hope you find something here in the way of the solution I found. And believe me, I didn't come by it perfectly willingly, and I do a lot of things in Alcoholics Anonymous grudgingly, and I sobered up, and all the, you know, when I get sober, physically sober, all the problems that are in my life, they're still there. All the reasons I drank are still right there. Now they just seem to amplify, you know, and unless I can do something about that, I'm doomed. And so I was desperate enough, again, to try Alcoholics Anonymous again. It always seems to be the last house on the block. And, a little over 7 years ago, I had just been fired from a fast food chicken place, which will remain anonymous, and lost my apartment. And had a bike. It wasn't even my bike, you know. It was one of the guys in AA. I just took it, and he's got it back today, though. So I pedaled over my brothers. My brother said, "You can stay with us, Jim, if you don't drink." And so there's nothing extraordinary about that. I've been in that position many times with my family, too many to count, actually. You know, I was praying to God for an answer, and you got to help me change my life. And one of these boobs from AA would call, you know, and they want to go have coffee or go to a meeting or something. And I'm thinking, God, that's not the answer I need. You know, what's going to make me okay here? I'm dying drinking, and I'm dying sober. What am I supposed to do? And that phone would ring, you know, and I'd see the caller ID, and I wouldn't pick it up, you know, because I knew it was one of those guys from AA, and they'd want to go to a meeting or go have coffee. Not what I expected, you know. But thank God that you people are patient enough and kind enough and tolerant enough to let me make the mistakes that I needed to make, and to let me be in enough pain in order to want to change, you know. What happened, I was living in Fargo, and this guy, Jeff, moved to town, who's my sponsor today, and he started working with people, and he started, you know, going to meetings. And he'd been sober a while, and didn't get there by doing nothing, I'm sure. So, but he found the two sickest, absolute sickest boobs he could find, and started working with them. And I was one of them. You know, I always learn more by what you do than what you tell me. You know, because I have this perception problem. I filter stuff through my head, it doesn't come out right ever. You know, so when I see you people in Alcoholics Anonymous doing what they're doing, that has a much bigger impact, it seems to me, on how I behave or how I'm willing to change. And you guys did things like show up on time. You know, I got to tell you, that's never been a part of my. It's never really been a part of my life. My wife the other day, it's been a little while now. She said, "I'm going out with some friends, and I might have a drink." And she was concerned that, you know, I'd be worried about this. And I said, "Okay, you know." And she goes, "Well, when I come home," and it's, "Jane, stop right there. You might go out and have a drink and come home. I, on the other hand, might go out and have a drink and end up three states away 4 days later," you know. So there are people out there who don't react to alcohol like I react to, which it's easy for me to forget sometimes. But at any rate, so... you guys did what you did, and I saw what you were doing, and I hoped that maybe, just so far removed from that, just maybe it would work for me too if I tried some of the things that you were doing, even though I didn't believe that they would work. I remember one night I called my sponsor, and I'm like, "Got this apartment, I can't pay the rent, what do I do?" And he said, "Well, you know, you're going to make this right, but obviously you got to get your stuff out of there." So Marcus and I from Fargo, Marcus and I were always drinking, you know, back and forth, and then the next guy would get he'd get the front seat one time, and I'd get the front seat next time. But I remember pushing this car that didn't run that I had, which reminds me, I got to say this because I think it's important. It's a privilege for me to be an Alcoholics Anonymous. It's not my right, and driving is also a privilege. It's not my right. So I didn't have a license anyway. Neither of us did. The car didn't run. And we're making this midnight move out of this apartment. We're pushing this car like half a mile, you know, across this vacant lot. And I'm just pissed and uptight. And I remember Marcus always tells the story. He said, "Jim, I looked over at you and I thought, there's a dead man right there, you know, and I'm sober, you know, and I get to these meetings and I'd see my sponsor doing things like going, he'd go up and he'd, new guy there, and I was the new guy once, damn it, and he, new guy there, and he'd go up and he'd stick out his hand, he'd start talking to him about the dumbest stuff in ever, and, but again, I learn more by what you do than what you tell me, so I'm standing outside the meeting one night, and I'm smoking, and there's a new guy standing there, and I'm standing there looking at him, you know, thinking, I know I'm supposed to be doing something here, but I really don't, I really don't care, so my sponsor comes out, and he instantly just sees what's happening, and he goes over and he shakes this guy's hand, and starts asking him questions, and I'm watching, and he starts asking him questions. Your job, what do you do? I work at Pizza Hut, and the guy says, and he gets the most interested look on his face, my sponsor, and he says, now do they ship that dough in, or do you make it all right there, you know? And the guy just lit up, and instantly here is somebody new who felt uncomfortable, just like me many times, who now feels welcome because somebody takes an interest in them, and I remember thinking, who cares? It's pizza dough, you know. If you want the Colonel Secret recipe, see me after the meeting. By the way, no, I'm glad that people in Alcoholics Anonymous understood how just deeply sensitive and fragile I am, and I'm over. My emotions really always just get the best of me, and. So much so that they gave me a nickname when I got here. They called me the Colonel. And my sponsor this day, he's got a way to bust me, my ego, well, many, many ways, believe me. When I was drinking one time, I borrowed a car. And the guy didn't know I borrowed his car. I just drove home, that's all. I parked it close to my home, not in my, you know, house, of course, because then I'd be caught. And there was some stuff in the car, and I took it. There was a coat in the car, and it had the name Roy on it. I wore that coat everywhere. Everywhere, for a long time. This one time I was in a car accident, and the rescue crew comes, right? And we're banged up pretty bad. It was, you know, pretty serious accident. I got hit by a beat truck, so I'm sitting in the car, and the rescue crew shows up, and I'm looking up at them, and they go, "Roy, you're gonna be okay. We're gonna get you out of there." And I said, "My name is not Roy," which seemed to convince them that I had a head injury in addition to whatever else was going on. And they said, "Roy, in a few minutes, we're going to give you a shot. We're just going to figure out how to get you out of the car, and we're going to be okay." And I said, "My name's not Roy. And why don't you take your jaws of life and cut the front of the door off and peel it back that way?" And they stopped them short, and they looked at me, and they said, "Good idea, Roy." So whenever I need a good bust and my sponsor comes up, if I think I come up with something clever, my sponsor just tells me, "Good idea, Roy." You know. And I just sort of muddled through, you know. I just sort of muddled through Alcoholics Anonymous, and to the best of my ability, well, it's not, sometimes not to the best of my ability. Sometimes I just show up, you know. Sometimes there's those days where all I have is the fact that maybe I'm sober and nothing else is going right, and I know it. And why does this always happen to me? My first year of sobriety, I moved in with some guys, and I was just my one year day, and I'm driving to work, and I get pulled over for speeding, and I'm thinking, you know what? Why is this worth it? Because I'm a year sober, and I'm thinking all this stuff while the cop's pulling me over, you know. I am a year sober, and he's pulling me over, and I've done all this stuff for Alcoholics Anonymous. God, haven't I tried to be good, you know? And you know what? Life still happens. Life still happens. I just got to get over myself a little bit. I got to get out of the way enough. And that's the amazing thing that seems to happen when I'm able to focus, follow what you do, I should add, you, and focus on what it is that you need. And my life seems to get better. And I don't learn that. I don't just intuitively know that. I learn that from painful experience. When I get into enough pain and begin to have some experience that I can turn my attention outside of me a little while, and my life seems to improve, and my problems seem to, you know, get a little smaller, a little further behind me. And I don't know why it works that way. I don't get it. I don't understand why I give in. I surrender in Alcoholics Anonymous, and all of a sudden things go better, you know. It seemed to me that it shouldn't work, but it still does. So the things I do today in AA are still the same things that got me sober in the first place, you know, and allow me to stay here. So, you know, I've struggled through a lot of, showed up grudgingly a lot of times, and I've struggled through with a lot of things that I knew I was supposed to do in Alcoholics Anonymous, and I get uptight and into self, and I have no ability to see it by myself. That's why I still have a sponsor, and I place myself, you know, I make decisions based on self, which place me in a position to be hurt, and then I got to work the steps on them, and it happened this week, but over the course of time, what's happened is, like I said earlier, Alcoholics Anonymous has allowed me to feel I can be okay. Like sometimes I'm in the right place at the right time. I can be comfortable, and I don't have to take a drink to be okay, you know. And that's all I wanted when I got here. However, some of the things that have happened since I've been here have been truly amazing. You know, there are people out there who don't react to alcohol the way I do, and they live their lives, and they have jobs, and they have relationships with their families, and they seem to do things for other people just because they get it, you know. And that frustrates me, because I'm here to save my butt, you know what I'm saying? And they just seem to get it, and I don't. So, you know, maybe the things that have happened in my life aren't extraordinary to those people, but keep in mind, I'm the same guy who got fired from my fast food chicken job and didn't have a place to live and was pedaling across town on my borrowed bike. So about 3 years sober, anyway, I remember having a talk with my sponsor, and I said, Jeff, nobody's ever going to love me. I'm never going to find anybody. And I was watching these people around me, and they started relationships, and they seemed to be doing well and having fun, and I, you know, I can be happy and jealous of them at the same time, it seems like. And he said, why do you think that, Jim? And I said, well, I got a glass eye, I'm 32, I smoke 2 packs a day, I'm alcoholic, and he just sort of chuckled, you know. You guys are chuckling now. I still don't get it, because I feel bad just thinking about it. And it's really ironic, because, you know, I met a girl, and that's pretty much how she told her parents about me too. So you can only imagine the paleness that must come over a father's face when her 20-year-old daughter is dating a 32-year-old alcoholic with a glass eye. I had an opportunity to take a job in Jamestown, so I moved here, and it's given me the ability to travel all over and see meetings all over the country, and do a lot of cool things. I got to visit the General Service Office in New York, and go to Akron with my sponsor and one of my sponsee brothers, and see where it all started. What a thrill! Who would have ever thunk? I wouldn't have, you know, that this stuff could happen in my life ever, you know. And yet, things continue to happen like that. So I asked that girl to marry me, and we got married. It's been an amazing year, I got to tell you. A little over a year ago, we were going to have a baby. And I've been trying to get to the Halloween party in Jamestown for years. You know, my work took me away from there. And on the eve of the Halloween party, she went into labor, you know. And she's like 6 weeks early. So Kemper's got me beat. Where's he at? Nice job, Kemp. Yeah. He's got 11 weeks early. Always got to outdo me. No, I'm just kidding. Anyway, so this baby is coming like 6 weeks early, and we're new parents. We don't know what's going on. And I'm at the hospital, and you know, she's doing what pregnant women do who are going to have babies, and I'm freaking out. I'm running in the hall, you know, she's bleeding here, you know, and my world literally at times like that, my world just, I can see it crumbling around me. You know, I know it's going to come down, and I know things are going to work out, and I feel sorry for myself, and I think, God, if this is really what you want for me, I'll. Okay, you know, and the first call I made was to my sponsor. And my sponsor told me, Jim, this isn't about you. This is about your family. And if you go and be there for them and act as though you have dignity and grace, you will have dignity and grace. And we went and we had that baby in Fargo, and he was in the ICU for about 2 weeks. And November 1st, we celebrated his one-year birthday. And then I got to add, my dad passed away in April, and he was going in for a surgery, heart surgery, which, I mean, it's supposed to be fairly routine, but I mean, a high-risk surgery, obviously, but it was supposed to be fairly routine these days, and he didn't make it off the operating table. I don't know if it's not really AA related, I suppose it is, but the anesthetist was sharing with us, the family, after the surgery, and he kind of picked his moment, though. It's kind of classic, my dad, kind of picked his moment because they were just getting done with the surgery, and she said, "Do you have any pain?" And my dad said, "Well, I got a little pain in my back, but it's okay. I'm sitting by a pond on a stump, and there's no wind here." And she said, "Well, that's fine, but you got to come back to me." And he said, "No, I don't think I will." And so he got to pick his moment there. And no wind, so we knew it wasn't North Dakota, I can tell you that. You know, at the, you know, you're in Alcoholics Anonymous when stuff like this happens. I was at our wedding dance, and this guy gets arrested. These guys from Fargo bring this new guy over, and we're at the wedding dance downtown here in Jamestown. This guy gets arrested, just beautiful. beautiful. And, you know, and then we go to my dad's funeral, and the guys, the people from Alcoholics Anonymous are there. I want to mention the first call I made was to my sponsor, and he told me to be of service to my family, and I was able to be there for him. And I was in jail when my grandpa died, and I was drunk when my brother died of alcoholism. And I was in no way there for those people, and I was able to be there. So we go to the funeral, and at the end they said the Lord's Prayer. You know what happens? I mean, keep coming back. You get that? It's beautiful. It's beautiful. Who said it will remain anonymous, but I will tell you, B. Miller was the only one not wearing a tie either, so. And last Wednesday night, when we found out that my wife and I are going to have another baby, the first call I made was, yeah, well, I didn't have much to do with it, I promise. Just kidding. Good one, Roy. Yeah. The first call I made was to my sponsor, and that's what you people have taught me. You've taught me that I can go through this life, and come what may, I can be okay and be sober. And with that, I would be overpaid. I promise you. At any rate, I guess, you know, being in a room where so many people have had such a big impact on my life forgive me, it makes me a little emotional. It was Jamestown here where I went to my first conference when I sobered up finally, and Mike and Kenny were there. And I still kind of resent you guys because you attacked me. I mean, here's these guys coming in, they're a couple years sober, and they're just lit up on fire. And they see me, and boom, they make a beeline, and they sat down at the table, and they're going back and forth. Oh, you got to get a sponsor. How are you doing with the sponsor? You work the steps, you know, but keep coming back. It works. They just traded, you know, back and forth. And I'm thinking, oh, is this all my life is going to be? And in spite of myself, it's turned out to be more than I could have ever imagined. I'm really grateful to be here with you this morning, and thanks for your attention. And this is going to be a phenomenal weekend, I promise. The speakers, the entertainment tonight, Damn. Yeah. Tell a friend, thank you for my sobriety. I love you. God bless.